Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the strawberry watermelon refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
The unsealed affidavit in the Tepe double homicide reveals an investigation that moved from two bodies discovered on a December morning to an arrest across state lines in just 11 days. For investigators, this case has presented a puzzle spread across multiple states. Surveillance footage from Columbus neighborhoods, a vehicle tracked to Rockford, Illinois, a firearm recovered in a Chicago high-rise, and a suspect who allegedly went to significant lengths to avoid detection, including using stolen license plates. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, is here to help break all of this down, and we're going to take a look at this from a couple different angles. Let's start here with the affidavit that states investigators identified McKee's vehicle through neighborhood surveillance footage, showing it arriving before and leaving after the estimated time of the murders. And there's surveillance footage, too, that we're learning about that also shows that he showed up at the beginning of the month, too, around December 6th, and was at the property. We don't know exactly what happened there yet, but it certainly is making a lot of people wonder, how long was this guy surveilling this woman? Jennifer, from your FBI experience, walk us through what that video analysis process looks like, because on the outside, we're seeing a lot of grainy images, but that's not just the one video that they have. There's a lot more going on behind the scenes, is there not?
There's a lot more, and this is just the criminal complaint, Tony, so this isn't the full extent of their case by any means, but it's the crux, certainly. I mean, when you're looking at these video footage, you're looking at, remember we started with him in that back alley at the time of the murder, so you're literally tracing every house in that back alley to try to follow his footsteps to how did he finally exit. And I believe that's what ultimately led to this vehicle. I think they just step-stoned it and finally got to video coverage of his vehicle.
And they've found a lot of interesting things with this vehicle. One of the things that we learned about more this week was that allegedly license plates were changed several times over the course of his journey from Rockford to Chicago. That shows us a little more premeditation. It kind of goes in with the whole silencer thing as well, where it shows, oh, you thought about this. This wasn't just this blind rage that brought you here. You had some cognitive ability along the path. What does that tell us about the mindset here when you're changing license plates across many, many miles, almost 325 one way?
Absolutely, Tony. Look, there's crimes of passion, and then there's crimes of passion that are supported by months and possibly years of premeditation and getting everything together to make that crime of passion happen. So when we look at this, we have the stolen license plate, which I find very interesting when you connect that also with the gun that was in Niben. In other words, that gun that was in Niben was likely used in a criminal act, pawn shop, possibly, maybe even somebody he knows that through a friend of a friend, you know, that gun had some smudge on it. You combine that then with a stolen plate. Who got in the stolen plate? It's easy to get another license plate. You can go on right now. We talked about this with the Buzzard case. You can go on eBay. You can go on Amazon and buy these plates. Why didn't he do that? I found that very interesting.
Especially a smart guy like this. I mean, this is somebody who researches things. He's a doctor, for heaven's sakes. He knows how to do this.
Nah.
He didn't do it.
You know what, Stacey? How many people you know that are so book smart? You can line up veins and arteries and memorize body parts and know exactly how to cut where and when. But boy, when it comes to just you know, common sense of how to get something done, they fail miserably. He failed.
100%. 100%.
Thank God these people aren't fans of true crime.
Right?
Because if they were, they would know what to do. I mean, just sit down and watch a couple reruns of Dateline and he would have done better. There's a lot of things in here that are like, why did you do that? Yeah. I mean, how did you think that this was going to work out well for you? And one of those things being his cell phone. This, to me, there's echoes of Koberger here, because his cell phone, in his if it's him, again, obviously McKee is innocent until proven guilty. He maintains his innocence, blah, blah, blah. If it's him, he left his cell phone at his office in Rockford for like 17 hours. The whole commission of driving all the way to their house, driving all the way back. Apparently, he did it without his cell phone. He was able to not be connected. Oh, my goodness, for those 17 hours. And he didn't die. Wow.
There's some commentary right there.
Wow. The future killers out there, you can be disconnected from your phone for a few hours and you won't die. But it is rather telling when you're disconnected for your phone for 17 hours, especially if that's not a regular pattern of yours to be doing so. That's a part that we don't quite know yet, though. But we do know his phone was not with him. It was at his office for those 17 hours on that drive to and from the Tepe's home. Without knowing the pattern yet, if he leaves his phone at his office on a regular basis for long windows of time, that's not going to look that suspicious. But if it is an outlier, it looks really suspicious. What is it? What do you think it tells us about this?
No, absolutely. And investigators just take all these different pieces. You have the fact that he had to go through many toll booths. So he thought, and I get it, I've got to change license plates. And I will say that was important for initially throwing off investigators. Mm-hmm. Look, they're looking at the tolls for his tag, and it wasn't there. So they said, we can't even find that. So now guess what? That means they've got to review all that video footage looking for that particular SUV. Brutal, brutal. Mm-hmm. Sitting there looking at all of that and try to figuring out the timeline of exactly when he came there, and then matching plates to unusual oddities, right? The stolen plate. And then you add on to that the fact he left his cell phone back at the hospital. right during the window of these murders. So there's a lot of these pieces you track together, and it just shows somebody trying to cover up and obscure the crime.
I want to ask this question, and it's on topic, but it's kind of off this case for a second, but kind of just onto this whole concept of piece of investigative work that traditionally has taken long periods of time because it requires man hours, requires somebody staring at a screen going, looking at all these vehicles going, is this one to be, and then if it is, okay, let's look at it closer. Is this the one? Thousands and thousands and thousands of vehicles you have to do this with as a human being. That takes a long damn time to put those pieces together. And traditionally has worked pretty well to throw people off by doing things like this because of the sheer manpower and hours that it would take to narrow something like that down. With the advent of AI and all of the new tools that are coming out, are we going to be having the same sort of conversation in 5 years from now of, they're going to look, but it's going to take a long time to get there? Because now, there's availability now. I'm sure it's only going to get better within 5 years where, boom, let's throw all this in, and what would take 5 weeks or months to get there, we could probably get to in 5 minutes. Is that going to help us narrow in on folks like this faster in terms of figuring out their whereabouts and their alibis and determining whether it's true or not? In terms of investigative work, are we getting closer to agencies like the FBI and local police forces utilizing things like this in crime solving?
Tony, did you look at my morning tweet or something?
I haven't yet, no.
I'm just kidding you. My good morning tweet was just about that.
I didn't see it today. Yeah.
AI, we're on the same wavelength. Yeah. I didn't equate it exactly to true crime, but of course that's the nexus. Yes, in answer to your question, they're getting there. They're going to get there. And also, you got to wonder, for instance, these toll booths, how much more are they going to look into making it easier really for law enforcement ultimately? Having a program that can say a blue SUV went through at this time, is it going to be cost effective? Are they going to do it? I think they'll do it, not because of law enforcement, but for their own needs, people running through and all the revenue that they get from that. But yes, I think we're getting to a stage, Tony, where look at when facial recognition, I'll never forget when that came out. It was around 2010. I remember I was in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and I sent one of our agents to this big conference. He goes, I don't want to do this. We're not going to end up doing this. There's going to be too many civil rights issues. Oh, no, no, no. This is coming, and it's already come, and it's here. And AI is also on its way in full force, where this is going to be easier.
Yeah, it's kind of spooky. Some will go, getting to the police state. Well, yes,
we've already been there.
We are, but I think we're going to get far more there very quickly. Like, we think we're there, we ain't seen nothing yet. We're in black and white TV mode still. We have yet to get to HD. I feel like the technology is there. It is coming. And then to have it employed and used usefully and effectively and timely, we're getting there. It's going to be very interesting when we do actually get there. Let's talk about the gun, because that's a big part of this. Obviously, it was in the Niben system, which is interesting. But it could just mean he bought it at a pawn shop and it had been used in something in the past. It doesn't mean that, you're immediately a criminal because you have a gun that was there. You bought it used, basically, and it had been used for something not so great at some point in time. So that's how you get the gun. But that being said, being the ballistics match, and every case is a little bit different. We have some cases where the ballistic matches are utter BS. Delphi is what I'm thinking of. And you have some where this actually might have something to it. It's preliminary in this case, but help us understand what exactly it means as far as this match that they have right now, this preliminary match to his weapon in the Niben system to what was used in the actual execution of this crime.
Yes. So I love this stuff. The casing, when you have what we call a cartridge means a bullet with a casing. In other words, the casing has the gunpowder that ignites the bullet or projectile to go out of the casing and strike someone or something. Left behind an ejected extracted and a firing pin hit left on it is the casing. Mm-hmm. So there's an extractor that extracts it. There's an ejector that throws it from the gun. And of course, when a firing pin fires, that ignites and explodes that gunpowder to send out that projectile. Well, those three are what we call tool marks. And there's an extractor, an ejector, and a firing pin mark. When you have all three of those, law enforcement experts can do a pretty good job of matching. Is this like DNA? No way. Is this like a fingerprint? Absolutely not. But at least microscopically, you can see those scratches and that indent that hit exactly at the same place and that firing pin traced back to all of that. The reason Delphi was a disaster, in my opinion, is because it was never ejected and extracted because it was fired. That was a cartridge. It was just ejected manually. You can imagine the force is so much different. And there's no firing pin strike. So now you're just down to ejector mark and extractor mark that is soft. It's like a cookie cutter. If you have a cookie cutter and put it into dough and you smash it down, you're going to get a clear cookie cutout. If I take it and just kind of push it a little bit, well, can I put that back to that exact cookie cutter? No, because I barely cut through the dough just a little bit. So anyway, I digress on Delphi, but that's what they've got right now.
Are we there? Are they that far with it? Have they, I mean, I guess that's the question because it's preliminary. Is it, have they run these bullets through this test to do that? Because I would agree. I mean, if Delphi had run a spent cartridge, you know, a spent bullet through the same gun, we'd be talking something different. But we have an unspent versus a spent. Have they done a spent versus a spent over here? Or are we looking at, well, this is the same type of gun that would have ejected this bullet. And you seem to have one and the registration shows us. I mean, have they gone that far to run these sort of tests at this point to make that sort of a match? Is that even what, I mean, the Nibin match isn't necessarily showing the bullet markings, is it? I mean, explain to this more.
Yeah, let me explain. So when it gets put into Nibin, basically there were cartridge casings found at some crime scene. And those casings were analyzed by a tool marks expert, typically.
Okay.
Then it's put in, and now you have sort of a library of these casings and marks. So then got the casings from the Tepe home. They said, whoa, these are the same ejector, extractor, and firing pin. Ding.
Okay.
So they've seen these before.
Seen them before. It matches something in their library. But to your point, Tony, yes, they're going to take that weapon that they found in Chicago and they are going to test fire again and again to see if they can make duplicates to the casings that were found in the Tepe home. So that's what's really going to matter. That's
so preliminary, what they have essentially is the bullet. They looked at this and went, oh, God, we already have a gun in our system that shows that it produces this exact same pattern on these spent rounds.
A casing
on the casing. And then they go, oh, God, look who owns the gun. And so now they're going to have to go do some more testing to make sure that it truly does. But essentially, if it was like a book, it would be like, it's the exact same chapter. We've already seen this chapter written somewhere else, and now it's here too. It's that detailed, basically. Preliminary, you got to do the homework to really, really make sure. But preliminarily, it's like, oh, this is the same damn one, and he happens to have it. The odds on that are pretty low, but let's just make sure it's accurate. So that's kind of where we're sitting.
Okay. The same cookie.
Yeah, the same cookie. Same
cookie over here.
Yeah.
Now another cookie comes up.
Yeah.
And they're looking for that cookie cutter. And they think they've got it back at his apartment over there in Chicago.
What a warm, wholesome way of looking at a really horrible situation.
Right?
What type of cookie would this be? What type of cookie would McKee bake if he were baking a cookie?
A 9 millimeter cookie.
A what?
9 millimeter cookie.
A 9 millimeter cookie. Okay.
I was thinking a monster cookie.
A monster cookie? I think he's someone who would eat like the shitty ones, like gingerbread, you know?
Hey!
where people are like, those are always the last ones on the cookie tray. It's like, oh, there's the gingerbread ones. They're They're okay. Like, I'll eat a little bit. Like, okay, I've had my gingerbread for the year. I feel like he'd be like that. It'd be like a gingerbread with raisin in it or something.
Oh, okay.
Like, that, I don't even think, I've never even heard of that, but it seems like something that might be up his alley, you know? Just
plucking off the gumdrop buttons. No!
Yeah.
Yeah. Buttons. You guys probably have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Shrek because I know every child's movie. I have all these children. And the king is like hurting the poor, you know, gingerbread man by pulling off his buttons. So something evil.
Seems like it'd be something he might do. Yeah. The unsealed affidavit in this case, in the Tepe murders, in the case against Michael McKee, the unsealed affidavit paints a picture that extends far beyond December 30th. According to court documents, Michael McKee allegedly surveilled the Tepe residence weeks before the killings, captured on video walking through their yard while Spencer and Monique attended a Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis. Witnesses told investigators McKee had threatened Monique for years, allegedly telling her he could kill her at any time and that she would always be his wife. The divorce was finalized in 2017. Murders occurred in 2025. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, is here with us to help us break this down. Let's get to what we have learned recently about his early visit to the home in December. I believe it was the 7th during that Big Ten game. We don't know, according to the affidavit, exactly where his person was on the property. I've seen various reporting. I've seen some outlets interpret it as he was in their house. I've seen some interpret it as he was in the yard. I've seen some where he was just at the property. The verbiage leaves a little bit to be desired in terms of directness. How have you interpreted the affidavit as to what the hell McKee was doing at that property early in the month when they were at that game?
Well, the verbiage is the curtilage, and we use that in law enforcement writing. You know, that's just kind of one of our words we always throw out, curtilage. What curtilage means is not inside the house. It means in and around that house, on that property, but not in that house. That's why you specifically write the curtilage.
So there would be a different term used if he had gone into the house, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I believe he was ever inside the house. I think he was on the outside. I wonder, because remember, she leaves that game very upset about her ex. And I wonder, you know how we all have Ring, right? And
I was going to say, she got a notification somebody was there.
Yeah. And maybe saw him and was so upset. I mean, that's what my mind jumps to when you hear the dates and the times and everything. And also, I don't know if you and I discussed it or if you saw it on my Twitter about Google Trends. You know, I'm really into that during crimes. Well, on the 5th, the only time that property beelines up is the day before all of this. And I can just imagine him Googling everything about that property, when it was sold, how much it was sold for, the specifications of the lot, where the rooms are and everything, because there is a huge beeline. The only time, just straight up. Very interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, that you know, we have like notifications that are out there. You can set them for yourself or your name or whatever, and then it pops up. You know, it gets kind of, you know, redundant if you're doing a lot of stuff. But if you're not normally Googled, it would be great to kind of see if someone is Googling aspects of your life and to be notified on that. Wouldn't it be nice? I mean, because I think that might be like, if you can get the, because after the fact is what we're doing here. We're looking geographically. Where was this searched? We don't know who searched it, but it's like, oh God, I know who lives in that city. And that's the only person who I would think might be looking me up. Why are they looking me up? That would be interesting as
that's
kind
terrifying.
Of a warning signal that, you know, one may get on themselves of someone else doing things. That being said, they say he was there for hours.
Yeah.
Hours. I mean, if he's not in the house, he's not making himself a ham sandwich or some pimento loaf. What the hell is he doing? I mean, is he just hanging out in the yard? Do you think he's sitting there checking out to see if there's certain entry points that he can get in by? Is he waiting for them to come? Was this a dry run? Was this just, you know, scoping out the scene? Or do you think maybe he was going to try and maybe that was the day of action and they just weren't home? What's your take on why he was even there?
No, I think this was what I call in law enforcement a site survey. And site surveys hours. I don't think he was sitting in his car. I wonder if he was walking around, looking around. Where should I best come in at? What's the best vantage? Where are all these cameras at on all these various homes? What are people doing at this time of day when I'm there? Are people home? Are they out? What's the situation? What cars are attributed to neighbor houses? So I know if people are coming in the neighborhood. This is typical site survey house site surveying that you would do, and it does take a couple of hours. So that time frame doesn't surprise me, and the fact that he did this doesn't surprise me. I think he was preparing.
God. I'm just like, what do you, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I could walk around my house in about 5 minutes and determine where I could and couldn't get it, or any house for that matter. I mean, I don't know, unless I'm like scaling it, but I, what is, it doesn't
what's he doing for an hour?
It doesn't take that long to go, this door's, you know, unlockable or unlocked, or is he, it's not that big of a house. What are you doing for those hours?
It's not just that house. It's the other houses. It's the alley. It's where he should park. It's the advantage of how he's going to walk up. How about I would literally go and I would say, where is every camera? Who? What houses have Ring? What houses don't have Ring? Where are those rings? I would be making schematics. I would be taking multiple pictures so I can't forget anything. I would be doing measurements. I would time myself how long it takes to approach a particular house. I would be covering the whole gamut, and that takes a couple hours.
That is some Ocean's 11 shit right there.
But okay, so he was there. How well do you think he did?
Well, he did pretty well because the only camera footage of him is scant. It's in that alley and you can't even really see him at all. True. And so he clearly knew how to enter and exit without being seen. I think that was really critical and what he did well. It took 11 days to narrow it down to him. So he did some things right in terms of obscuring and getting in and getting out without being seen.
Flipped the plates, pre-surveilled the house. In his mind, he thought he was checking all the boxes.
Yeah, he checked some. Not well enough.
Yeah, just not well enough. Are you surprised? I mean, or is he kind of falling short here where, you know, the average person who's not in law enforcement, not super, divested into or invested into true crime, about as good as they would do, about as good as an amateur would do on something like this? Is that about what he did?
Yeah, an amateur. I mean, you'd compare it to Brian Koberger. Brian Koberger did an amazing job with what he had to work with, and especially his situation where that's a bloody scene where he's hands-on strangling, beating, you know, striking, kniving, you know, it's amazing the job he did. But when you compare to that, I give Brian an A, but for that sheath, we probably wouldn't have a conviction right now. And I give McKee a C.
Well, Brian studied, you know, this is not, McKee doesn't have that background. I don't know what he did in his spare time, I guess. So maybe I can't speak to that.
I don't know that we want to know what he did in his spare time.
I don't want to know.
But I am kind of curious. I am kind of curious what he did for 8 years other than like, I mean, I'm picturing, I mean, this is just pure conjecture, but I'm picturing like an altar or something in his house, you know, with her picture on it and a lot of candles. I mean, that's probably crazy. That's what's going to end up in the Lifetime movie now that I've thrown that into the ether.
I'm sure.
Completely from my mind. That's not likely what's there at all. But, you know, you never really know. Let's go back to that football game, that Big Ten game that Monique and her husband were at, and that she left at halftime. And friends are now saying that Spencer had communicated, it was something about her ex-husband. She was upset about something. Obviously, it's the same day that he showed up at the house that we've now learned. We don't know exactly what she knew, how she knew it, or what was going on? We don't have the answer to that portion. I'm going to guess it's probably something like we're suspecting here. You know, you get that little chime and like, oh, there's a squirrel at my door. And then she sees her ex-husband.
Very and, big squirrel. I mean,
that might make you get a little bit upset. But we don't know what happened after that. And a lot of people are asking the question, why didn't she call law enforcement? Why didn't she make a report? We don't know that she didn't. At this point in time, let's speak to that a little bit, Jennifer. What do we not know about what happened after that moment in time and what might have actually been done?
Well, when you look at this case, because of the years that it's coming out that apparently he was stalking her, he was calling her, he was harassing, right, her, you wonder, did she do any police reports? We haven't heard about any, but to your point, that doesn't mean they're not out there. If she didn't, though, I think it's just out of pure fear. In working with domestic violence issues, people, and also through law enforcement when I was doing it, I am telling you, they are terrified to upset the apple cart. Look, she had two little kids. And can you imagine some of the things he might have put in her head about what's going to happen if she said anything?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to learn a lot of that.
I mean, isn't there... Oh, I'm sorry, Tony, go ahead.
I think we're going to learn a lot about things in that realm as more digital stuff comes out. Go ahead, Stacey.
I'm curious about intimate partner homicide. There's typically a cooling off period, isn't there? And this is a huge cooling off period between from when the relationship was terminated to the alleged murders. How does this case compare to other cases that you've seen in that regard?
Well, some people don't cool off, unfortunately, Stacey. And I brought this up, I think, last time we kind of chatted about this, and that's the Betty Broderick case.
Yeah.
For four and a half years. You know, that wasn't, they divorced and she did something. No, no, no. And I think we're going to hear a lot of the same thing. Telephone calls, hangups, threats. You know, we'll see what she shared with everybody. It seems like she broad-stroked things from what we're hearing right now, but what are they going to be able to find on communications that they might have had, even if it's from a long time ago? I think this is the female or male version of a Betty Broderick, years of hate.
I want to ask a question too, because another it's a criticism that's being put out there, and I'm not trying to blame the victim here or anything, but had she gone to law enforcement, maybe she did. We don't know the answer to that question is the point, but if she did go to law enforcement, if someone who's in this situation, they're at a football game, they discover their ex of 8 years ago is meandering around their house or outside their house. They don't know why they're there. Let's say there's no other communication here. It's just, you know, fairly 8 years of silence. And then this, and you, if you were to go to police and you were to say, this is, I got this, but the last communication was 8 years ago. And yeah, he did say some horrible, scary things to her, threats, you know, during the marriage, allegedly, kill her at any time, you know, always be my wife, that sort of thing. But it was 8 years ago. How, it's probably rolling the dice, but you tell me, Jen, what kind of response are you going to get from law enforcement when you're saying, well, this is weird. I saw him outside my house on my Ring cam, if that's what happened. And he said these things to me all those years ago. Is it going to be taken with the same weight as if it was these threats were actively being made last week or a month ago or more recently than a decade ago?
Well, a couple of things. From my understanding, this is something that was continuing during that time frame. It didn't happen 8 years ago and then stop. It kept continuing. That at least is my understanding from what we're hearing, witnesses and friends of her say. But I think what you're really getting at is, Jen, what could law enforcement and what would they have done? They would have taken a report. I truly believe that. That is if they went to the right house.
They screwed that up too. Yeah.
Jeez. But, you know, not being too tough on law enforcement, but I, you know, just had to throw that out there. Anyway, I think that they would have taken a report, but this is the problem in these domestic violence cases. And we see it over and over again. If they want you, they are going to get you. They will find you and they will get you. And there's typically nothing law enforcement can do unless you hire somebody to sit outside of your house 24 hours a day. Yeah. And keep, there's nothing you can do. They are going to get you. I can't think of one case where law enforcement somehow diverted a crime like this, a domestic violence crime, other than when they came in on it maybe and got the person before they were completely beat to death.
Yeah.
If they're going to get you, they get you. And that is the horrible part of it. Listen, this victim did everything she could. Separated herself early after only 7 months of marriage. She got the divorce done within 2 years. She moved far away from him, separated completely from all accounts. She did everything.
Yeah, I mean, she really did. She checked all the boxes. And you're right, law enforcement would have probably, you know, done the report. But it wouldn't have been this fantasy, I think, that people have in their head of like, see, they would have gone and arrested him then. No, they wouldn't have. This was a domestic divorce case from 8 years ago that's long filed away and done. That any of this, you know, and in some of these things, these weren't even in the divorce documents. So like there wasn't even anything to go off of. This is all hearsay. This is all people after the fact stating that she said this stuff. So it's not like they can go back to the divorce docs ever and go, oh God, look, she made all these threats. None of this was documented at all. So you got that. So what would have happened? Maybe a document that was written up and then kept at the police station should they ever have to get a call again. But very likely, McKee probably wouldn't have even contacted. It would have just been, that's it, said and done. Is that, you know, we all want to have this safeguard up, but it's not realistic. You're not hiring a 24/7 bodyguard when you report something like this. You're making a record. And that's very, very different. And I feel like some people think that it's going to be this 24/7 bodyguard and they're really going to keep an eye out for you. They can't logistically. It's not that they don't want to or like help and serve and protect the people around them. It's just not a realistic request with something like this. Otherwise, everybody would have it, and people can abuse this system the opposite way as well. Is there anything, I guess my question would be, in this process that has room for reform or change, or is this just literally the best that we can do, the system that we have of reporting these things, keeping records of it? Because our police are not our personal bodyguards. Is it operating it as optimally as it can, as you know, basically on protecting civil liberties as we have it right now?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, in this case, remember there was a protective order, but it wasn't because anybody asked for it. It's simply that's the policy where that divorce was filed. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a protective order against him, you know, 8 years later concerning this situation. But I do believe in protective orders, not because it's going to protect you, but because at least then if you have somebody on your curtilage, you can report to police, and then possibly they could at least take him in for trespassing or for violating that protective order. So once you have a protective order violation, then at least you have something more legally to go after somebody if things progress, right? And then if it happens two or three more times, then maybe they can actually get a more serious charge against them and maybe do some time, right? So it's more preemptive from a legal lens, but not from a protective lens. So Tony, back to your question, the only thing people can do if they truly believe their lives are in jeopardy or could be in jeopardy, unfortunately, is private security. That's it. It's so expensive. It's cost prohibitive. The police can't do anything. It's just these domestic situations are literally the worst.
I see it in our chat section and in our comment section on YouTube after the show. People are terrified of that prospect, that if I have terminated a relationship with somebody and they come after me, I have no recourse. There's nothing I can do because if I report it, I'm going to enrage them and then they're going to come after me anyway. And it's a terrifying prospect.
It is terrifying. And there are, you know, there are more safeguards, you know, there's cameras, there's things that can alert you. There's multiple more locks that can be on the door. Certainly combo locks are never a good answer. You know, you have to have that chain lock. You have to have a deadbolt lock. I mean, there are other things that can be done. But Stacey, to your point, you know, do you fear enraging that individual? I mean, I keep asking myself this question with the rage and hate that he had. How in the world did he not hurt those children?
Yeah.
And I always wondered if it was because she didn't push that button. In other words, that he had some sense of compassion, I guess, for the kids. But if she would have done these things we're talking about, filed police reports, had people go to his house, you know, law enforcement go to his house. If she would have put gasoline on the fire that was already ablaze, what would have happened to those children? You know, I don't know. I'm just saying there's no good answer for somebody suffering from someone is after them. There's no good answers.
I mean, or is that part of the cruelty and part of the maniacal, you know, nature of this, of I'm going to let them live and I'm going to let them know that I killed their parents in the room next door. And then they get to sit with that their whole lives. Obviously, having a life is better than not, without a doubt. But there's a cruelness to that as well of and this all happened to you when you were a kid. I mean, it all comes down to speed bumps, I think, at the end of the day. You know, there's many a parking lots out there that have really shitty speed bumps. And, you know those parking lots. And do you tend to go through the most speed bumpy area of those parking lots? No, a lot of times you're like, I'm going to go this way. I'm going to go. But if those speed bumps weren't there, you would just go through one certain way. So more people need to view life and protection as speed bumps, not necessarily a vault door that's going to be there, because most of the time you can't afford the vault door and there's no one that's going to just offer you the vault door for free, meaning 24/7 protection. But if you put like 42 speed bumps in front of you, people may choose not to travel down that road. You may get the one that's very damn determined. And look, you can have a nuclear arsenal pointing at them and they're still going to go straight towards it. Those are the folks you got to worry about. But if you can curtail some folks that may otherwise, this is easy enough to access, put those speed bumps up. And that's exactly what we were talking about. Cameras. I have gazillions of them at every which angle. So if you get on my property, you're going to be filmed every which way. No matter what, you're not going to get away with it. People will know who you are. It's just, it will happen. So if more people have things like that, and they're relatively affordable today, just the more speed bumps one can put into their life, the better off they're going to be. And it's a way to not have to live in fear or live in a world where, well, I wish we could have this. Well, you can't. You can't have 24/7 protection. But here's what you can have. So let's stop living in a hole and actually do things that are going to actually truly protect us and not put us at greater risk. I think that's a lesson that maybe learned in here. So many questions, though. Let's move over to another case that we've obviously been following for quite some time with a new chapter that's being written. The families of Kaylee Gonzalez, Madison Mogan, Zanna Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin have done something that shifts the focus of the case from the monster who killed them to the institution that allegedly knew he was dangerous and did nothing. Their lawsuit against Washington State University was now just moved to federal court in Seattle, and the central claim is devastating. At least 13 formal complaints were filed against Brian Koberger during his single semester on campus, stalking, harassment, and predatory behavior. And the university allegedly sat on its hands while paying him a salary, providing him housing, and giving him access to the students. Were they sitting on their hands too long, I guess, is the question. He was in and out after a semester. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, is with us to help break this down. Let's talk about this. Jen, 13 formal complaints about Koberger's harassment, kind of, you know, predatory-like behavior towards female students, staff during this single semester on campus, finding ways of communicating, texting 911 to each other as a warning signal that Koberger is nearby. From an investigative standpoint on the crimes, obviously, that we know he committed, but when we're looking back on this as an armchair quarterback, when you're looking at the institutional failures here, or if it was an institutional failure, what does it tell you when a university receives that volume of complaints about one individual and takes at least a full semester to take any sort of meaningful action?
Well, you know, I have to say that first of all, I understand why the families have come together. And by the way, this is a little bit unprecedented from the standpoint of the Chapins.
Yeah.
You know, Chapins have never been sort of on board with much of any of this. They weren't even a trial for the longest time until the very end. And their whole point was, we went away for 2 months, we gave it to God, and we're done. We are not going to discuss this anymore. We're pretty much done. Mm. Mm-hmm. And so for them to be part of the lawsuit, that was probably, for me, the most intriguing part, knowing this case as I do. Secondarily, I think that this would be completely unprecedented. In other mm-hmm. words, it would be different if Brian Koberger attacked a girl on the campus. Mm-hmm. And they made, but he traveled 10 minutes to another state, focused on a house, not even a campus institution of WSU's,
yeah,
completely different institution, and did something that no one could believe. Not even Dylan Mortensen in the house, hearing yeah. everything that happened, could just say, wow, this could possibly be a reality. No one could believe what happened there. No mm-hmm. one. And so for WSU officials to sort of be able to say, oh, I bet you know what this guy's going to do. This guy's going to run and do what he did. No.
Yeah.
So that doesn't make much sense to me. But there is no way, I don't think, WSU wants this all in the limelight.
Correct.
This all stirred up. There, you know, I bet you, I don't know, I haven't looked at the numbers. My bet would be that their enrollment in their PhD, in their criminology, and in their school program has dive bombed
yeah.
Since this case. As with Idaho, I bet theirs has dive bombed too. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, Tony, I think it'll be settled. I understand what the families are doing, and I do think there'll be some settlement in this. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if it went to trial. Neither side wants it to go to trial, I don't think.
Yeah.
Imagine those families would have to go through everything again. And you know those pictures that the court has said aren't going to be public? That's going to be all throughout. Because yeah. they're gonna have to show the brutality, and all of that's going to be out there. I can't imagine the family really wants that. I think they're looking for a settlement.
And I don't think they're out for money either, by any means. I mean, you and I both, you know these families a bit, you know, off the air too. These are not people that are out to cash in on any of this. And I know Ethan's mom too. She's actually reached out to us several times about some of the stuff that we've talked about in a very nice way. And I, you know, I very much respect them. Is this a lawsuit that is more so a shove in the direction of do better? Do you think that they were looking at the way the university was handling this and going, yeah, they're basically saying we did everything and, you know, that's our protocol. Are they looking at us going, do better? You can do better. It's 13 complaints. I don't know. I don't know if that it seems like a lot of complaints, but I don't know how many complaints professors get against them. People are snowflakey. People complain about everything. So I don't know. I really don't know in terms of how many they get, but it probably also should be looked at the veracity of the complaint, what it actually is about, what people are complaining about, the behavior. Is it predatory or is it just they don't like the method of someone's teaching? All of that. Is this them going, we're going to push you and the settlement is going to be, here's how we're changing our policy. Not necessarily, here's the dollar amount we're going to give you, although I'm going to guess there probably will be some sort of a dollar amount involved in this. But to close the door on this, I wonder if that's going to be the big sticking point of, what are you going to do different? We don't care about your checkbook. What are you going to do different? Is this a vehicle for that?
At the end of the day, Tony, you hit it the nail on the head. This is not about the monetary settlement. This is about preempting another university who sees a professor or student, anybody else acting in this way with these types of complaints, getting them off their campus, you know, because they can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a private institution. They could say, listen, you've had 13 complaints. We're going to revoke your enrollment. We're going to cancel your position. We're not going to hire you anymore. You don't have a job anymore for mm-hmm. cause based on those situations. So definitely, I think, knowing these families, as we both do, they want to make a statement to stop something like this in the future.
How common is it for somebody to use their department to refine their skills? I mean, if you've got a coworker who is kind of that creepy person, and you're watching them, like they're using academia to maybe create the perfect scenario for a crime. Do you think that's common?
I don't know how common it is. Do I think it can happen? Absolutely. Look at all of the law enforcement officers that commit horrible crimes. Look at Banfield right now. Just imagine how his training at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center aided that whole, you know, thing. If indeed he's guilty, I'll put that on. Right. So I think it happens for sure, Stacey. I always wonder with Brian Koberger, what was the cart and what was the horse? In other words, he was involved in law enforcement so early on and wanting to be, you know, in security and do all that. Was it the being turned down? And was it all of that that created this monster? I think the monster was created well before. And to your point, I think that he purposefully got involved in that sort of academic area to make a crime that was eventual happen smoother.
Dang. Let's go back to the lawsuit itself, though, because I don't know how you're, and that's why it's probably going to be settled, because I don't know how you actually prove that the university, their actions would have done much. I mean, could they have stepped in earlier? Could they have taken disciplinary action against Koberger quicker? Could they have fired him? Could they have taken away his house? Sure. They could have done all of that. And then they would have been sued by Brian Koberger.
Sure.
Because what was going on, what they knew at that time, was not in violation of any laws. He was creepy. He was weird. He was making people uncomfortable. He wasn't doing anything illegal. He wasn't. I mean, as creepy as he was, the accounts that people have about him don't really go. I've yet to see anything. I mean, can you think of anything here that was illegal that he was up to, that people have openly said, here's what he did in class, here's how he was doing. I mean, ethically violations, sure, but illegal?
No, in violation though of their policy, likely.
Sure.
Discriminatory actions, you know.
Yeah.
Eating all the stuff we know about. He was definitely creepy, all of that. I agree with you. If they terminated him, I think, which remember they were in the process of doing.
Yeah.
Did they do it soon enough? As I said, I really don't think this case will ever go to trial for so many reasons.
Yeah. And I,
they're making a point.
They are. And I don't know that they could have acted. I mean, look, institutions, bureaucracies, all this shit, it moves slow. It does. It sucks. It is what it is. Could we do better? I hope. I don't know. I mean, it seems like we've been saying we want these bureaucracies to do better forever, and they just keep getting slower and worse. So I don't know the answer to that, especially when you have attorneys involved. I don't know that they could have moved any faster. They did know early on there's a problem with this guy, and they started moving in that path of termination, to which they eventually did get at the end, the natural end of a period, a semester. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like when you hire somebody, 90 day, you know, startup period. Let's hope it all works out great. But after that, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You give it its time. And it seems like they were giving it that time. If Brian Koberger were the buffet manager at a Shoney's, would we be having the same conversation? Would they be suing the Shoney's because he was making people feel uncomfortable when he was loading up the corn dogs onto the buffet and standing there lurking? I mean, or is it because more so that he was in a position of academia because he was a professor or assistant professor? Is that what makes this different? Or again, would we be having, like I said, the same conversation, you know, when Shoney's bears start showing up in people's front steps in the middle of the night, which would be creepy as shit.
Well, I have to say, just the fact that you mentioned Shoney's is cracking me up, because probably 90% of your viewership is going, what in the hell is a Shoney's?
You'll find a Shoney's somewhere in like a Branson has a Shoney's.
It's south, yeah. It's in the southern part. You guys are hungry, aren't you? I've heard cookies. I'm all this stuff.
That's right.
I can just picture Koberger at a Shoney's, can't you? Just he's like walking out there. Here's more mixed vegetables.
I really don't think it would have mattered where he was at, you know, where he would have been working at. What I think their major point is look, when you have somebody in your employ or under your supervision and they do X, Y, Z, and you don't do anything about it, and then they commit a murder like this, are you responsible? And I think that that is a big jump to make, honestly, because talk about precedent. If they settle, it's no big deal. This goes to trial. You have a major precedent. Can you imagine all the universities going, oh my gosh. I mean, that begs the question, well, you know, on the Brown situation, you know, he attended there, right? And he stepped out on his own accord. But just think of all the individuals at these universities that have committed violence like this. There's a lot, maybe not exactly like this, but what a precedent. I think this is more for a statement than going to trial.
Well, and here's another way to look at it, too. It probably would have been a hell of a lot easier to get fired from Shoney's and without much thought of lawsuit either. I mean, in reality, the process to fire someone from an academic institution the way that they did required a lot of boxes to be checked if they're going to do it through their protocol so they don't get sued. He probably could have been fired by the Shoney's by the assistant manager, who's like, what is that sauce on those vegetables? I don't think that's the, you know, there's a...
Thank you, Todd. Thank you.
You know, I was going to go there some way, shape or form, but you probably could. It's been done like that. Is this going to expose that a little bit too, of the tolerance level to which some of these institutions are willing to take to avoid a lawsuit? And is it out of whack? Has it become so far out of whack in the way of avoiding error for lawsuit from potential predator versus protecting the student body as a whole? Is that what we're really looking at here?
Well, make no mistake, this will be revisited because of this lawsuit precedent or no precedent. I would expect all these universities to reconsider their firing policies and also their disenrollment policies just based on this case. And if nothing else, that's what this lawsuit should do, is bring more awareness to these universities and really to every place. How about every place? Every place that employs individuals. Yeah. It really, you know, which is kind of sad in a way from the standpoint of, geez, somebody can say, you know, they went out on a date and they act creepy toward him. And the next thing you know, you're in the dean's office going, you're going to disenroll me because that whack job said that, you know, I just didn't want to see her again. And, you know, it's complicated, especially when a lot of these are opinion-based, opinion-based issues, right? I saw it this way. She saw it that way. Complicated to say the least, but you betcha they're going to relook at policies around campuses.
There needs to be a threshold. Yeah. I mean, 13 complaints against one person, and they're very similar complaints. You could have separated these people, and they probably told the same exact story about Koberger. So there has to be a threshold somewhere.
It's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. And no Shoney's were harmed in the making of this episode.
I got to look this up, Shoney's.
They're still around. I mean, I don't think they have a lot of locations, but I think the last one I was actually at was in Branson. And this was many a years ago.
That's what they do well. They're in Kansas, too.
Are they? Yeah, I think I've seen it in Kansas, too. Yeah, yeah.
They have a hamburger on their front page that just looks amazing.
Yeah.
With Koberger's special sauce.
Yeah. Todd?
There you go.
The Koberger. Get it?
Thank you. The new Koberger at Shoney's. That's like, well, in 100 years, when all these horrible things get like turned into like movies and romanticized, like Titanic and shit, maybe Shoney's will have the Koberger to celebrate the movie of the tragedy of 100 years ago. Because that's how shit works. It's fucked up.
No. They're never going to have a Poe burger.
Hey, did you ever, do you think the folks on Titanic thought that that would be a blow up slide at a county fair at 100 years later? The kids are like, "Wee, let's go down this." I mean, it's a horrible tragedy, but we have a really sick way of normalizing and romanticizing tragedy once everybody that was involved in it and remembers it was dead. So who knows? I mean, people go to stay, you know, at the Lizzie Borden house for fun. So
haven't you done that?
I haven't. No, but it's a thing, you know?
Okay. I thought you
it's,
had.
It's a thing, you know? It's
bad enough that his initials are BK, Burger King. It's bad enough that everybody says BK.
There's a lot of connections here to fast food. There's going to be, God, I don't want to see the Happy Meals in 100 years as to what the, it's going to be messed up. All right, that's enough on that. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or on our Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com, to weigh in on all this. Apple Podcasts, press subscribe, take us with you wherever you go. Leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts as well. We do greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for Coffin Daffer, for Stacey, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer. We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're gonna need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer. We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're gonna need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, mm-hmm. but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, mm-hmm. but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, mm-hmm. but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. That's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's going to be...
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.